Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to World Weekly from the Financial Times. I'm Gideon Rachman. Today we're talking about Turkey, where President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has just suffered a rare and important political setback. Joining me on the line from Ankara is our correspondent there, Laura Patel, and here in the studio is our former correspondent in Turkey, Daniel Dombey. Laura, first of all, I was referring, of course, to local elections over the weekend in the biggest cities in Turkey where Erdogan lost.
Yeah, well, these elections took place across the country, and it seems that Erdogan has definitely lost Ankara, which is the capital and an important city, and he seems to have also lost Istanbul, the country's biggest city, its most prosperous and most influential place. I say seems to because there is a very bitter dispute continuing over who actually won. The opposition fielded a unity candidate called Ekrem İmamoğlu, who everybody agrees is ahead by 25,000 votes on a preliminary count. But that is a tiny margin in a city of 16 million people. And the AKP, which is President Erdogan's ruling party, in a sort of strange reversal of the situation that usually happens after Turkish elections, the AKP are the ones who are claiming that this election was full of irregularities and they're challenging the result.
Now, Dan, I mean, I suppose had almost mentally moved Turkey into the ranks of not quite democracies anymore, and must admit I was slightly surprised that Erdogan would lose and that that could go through. But what is the state of democracy in Turkey right now? It's a complex question, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, no one is pretending that these were necessarily fair elections because, of course, Erdogan and the AKP have enormous advantages in terms of government power, in terms of a friendly media and so on. But I think there are a few things here. First of all, there is a, particularly in some of the biggest cities, a really fairly inextinguishable sense of civic participation, which has flared up from time to time in all sorts of ways. And you can remember the Gezi protests of 5 or 6 years ago. Secondly, if you look at Turkey, along the coastlines, there's long been this kind of hotbed, or at least this area which has resisted the AKP's drive. I mean, Turkey is like many countries in which Erdogan has an alliance of basically people in the poor areas of towns and in the countryside, and the big metropolises have always resisted him in it to a greater or less extent. Turkey is cities versus towns. Finally, I would just make one or two tiny little points. Turkey's not had free and fair elections, but it has had elections. Erdogan feels that the Electoral Act is a tremendously important thing. It's a validation often for what many people see as his successes. He has had quite a strong narrative for that constituency of his that I've referred to. He's done all sorts of things in terms of giving religious observant people greater place in national life, of bringing services to people in some of those poorer areas. But Turkey's gone through a very difficult time. We had had real problems with the economy, real problems with the lira. And because of that, because much of Erdogan's political appeal over 20 years almost has been based on an economic success, we're seeing that translate, perhaps not very efficiently, into electoral results. Finally, I would say there are still some place for institutions in Turkey, and the role, therefore, of the electoral authorities is absolutely crucial here.
Yeah, just to elaborate on that point briefly. So even though a lot of people have been arrested on what appear to be trumped up charges, there is pressure on the press. You're saying that the electoral process is clean, that there's not ballot box stuffing, that kind of stuff.
I'm saying that the electoral process is still an actual process. Erdogan invests enormous significance in it. He says, you know, this is what matters. It matters of a ballot box and so on. There have been several examples of questionable issues in the past. I can't pretend to know what's happened in the southeast of Turkey, which is a long way away from the mass media and so on. I certainly can remember Ankara elections in 2014, 5 years ago, which were disputed, where the opposition candidate who won this time basically alleged that he was cheated last time. I think there were reports of last-minute power cuts. But that's only really sometimes something you can do where there's a very narrow margin, to be absolutely honest, to cheat in a way that doesn't beggar belief in a metropolis of 5 million people or more. So at the margins, these were not fair elections. They may not have been wholly free elections, but they were elections.
So, Laura, where are we now? I mean, is Erdogan shocked, and how do you think he's likely to react?
Well, so first of all, I should say that his AKP are trying very hard to spin this as not a massive defeat. You know, it's worth saying that his party got 44% of the national vote, which made it the biggest party. And he was in a kind of alliance with an ultra-nationalist party. And together, they got 52% of the national vote, so a majority. And I think there have been some premature jubilation among the opposition, like predicting the beginning of the end for President Erdogan. And it's definitely too soon to say that. But the thing is that by his very own benchmarks, losing Ankara and then possibly Istanbul is a big blow for him. You know, he is very fond of saying, and has been for years, to his party, if we lose Istanbul, we risk losing Turkey. President Erdogan himself built his own political career from the basis of winning mayor of Istanbul in 1994. That's where he began his journey to the national stage. And so I think he and his party are going to go through a period of soul searching. I mean, we're sort of at a fork in the road. There's a question about how he's going to respond to this. You know, one way for him to do it would be to be quite reconciliatory, humble, to say we've made mistakes. You know, he's had setbacks in the past and found ways out of them or tried to learn from them. But, you know, as already discussed, he also can respond quite harshly to setbacks and challenges to his rule. Sometimes he responds quite disproportionately, his critics would say. So he's actually gone very quiet since the election result. He came out on Sunday night, made his traditional balcony speech, in which he tried to put a positive spin on things, kind of giving some of the numbers that I was talking about, saying that they would listen in the places where they had lost and promising some economic reforms, sort of bid to kind of calm the markets down after a bit of a torrid time for the lira and other Turkish assets. But really, I think we don't know yet how he's going to respond. They seem to be fighting quite hard, actually, to try and overturn this result in Istanbul, which would be incredibly controversial if they did it. I mean, clearly, the gap between the parties is very, very small. And in any country, that would be controversial and would be the subject of disputes. But I think that there's this issue that President Erdogan and his party have a problem of trust in the eyes of the opposition and also in the international community, particularly the EU and the US. And even if they rightfully won the election, I think they would struggle now to turn over the result. They don't quite know where that would lead. Would there be protests from the opposition? Would there be objections from the international community? So I think the most pressing thing is to have this Istanbul disagreement resolved, and then we'll see which direction he's going to take.
And Dan, I mean, Laura there mentioned the markets. I guess the added factor is that Erdogan should take into account, maybe he won't because he's not always that market savvy, is that Turkey is under immense international economic pressure at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, Turkey has what many economists see as structural problems, and the country came under a lot of pressure last year, which has been renewed this year. The concern is that the pressure and the upshot of that pressure has been deferred. The country has very few international reserves when you net them out, something like just a little bit more than 20 billion, 23 billion or so on a net basis. It has quite a lot of corporates which are heavily indebted in terms of dollar-denominated or foreign exchange-denominated debt. And historically, it has had real problems in terms of generating a current account surplus or keeping in balance for any sustained period of time. It's often had to deal with very big current account deficits. So it's a country where the currency has been under enormous strain, and there hasn't been many ways of dealing with that strain in terms of reining government spending or increasing interest rates to a level that's sustainable. And this is something that has not really been resolved. Last year, the lira came under pressure. They allowed interest rates to go up for a bit. They talked on fiscal retrenchment, but nothing really was resolved. And now, again, with a very uncertain international environment, the lira is coming under strain. There's a long-running concern that the politics sometimes feeds into the economics in that they're not necessarily very rational decisions being made on the economic front, that sometimes companies are being indebted that may find it difficult to service. And this is something that fundamentally poses the biggest problem for Mr. Erdogan, because his appeal for many, many people is based on his record of economic success over 20 years, in which many Turks' economic living standards have gone up, and how sustainable that is, whether there is a bigger, broader correction after already a very painful correction over the last 9 months or so, is the question of questions for him and for the AKP.
And indeed for Laura, I'll turn that one to you, because You probably remember I was in Turkey late last year. We did some interviews together, and certainly I came away with the sense that Turkey possibly face an impending crisis, that you were going to get the threat of corporate bankruptcies. A lot of people were saying they would have to go to the IMF. Has that sense of crisis dissipated, and how does the current politics play into it?
I think the sense of crisis did dissipate a little bit after last year's currency crisis, which happened in August. I mean, at that time, people were really talking about the need to go to the IMF potentially very, very urgently, like about a full-blown balance of payments crisis happening in Turkey. That went away a bit because the government was seen as belatedly doing some of the right things. But actually, in recent weeks, particularly in the run-up to the election, those concerns have started to bubble up again. I mean, the government was accused of doing some very unconventional things to try and prop up the lira, including burning through some of its central bank reserves that Dan mentioned, and making quite sort of unfree market-friendly interventions to stop short-selling of the lira, which wrought havoc with all sorts of other dimensions of Turkish assets. And that has undermined some of the credibility that they regained in the eyes of investors. And that matters because these portfolio managers and their money are really important for keeping the Turkish economy afloat. So all of these people have been kind of waiting to see what happened after the elections. The response actually to the result has been fairly muted in the markets. I think everybody is waiting for an economic reform program that is supposed to be being set out next week by Berat Albayrak, who is the finance minister and the son-in-law of President Erdogan. The reality in Turkey right now is that those two people, the president and his son-in-law, have enormous control, almost sole control, over the economic policy direction of this country. And it's going to be up to them to decide what to do. What I hear from all the investors I talk to is that they really want like bold, dramatic plan of action to be taken, announced quickly, to show that the government really understands the depth of the problems. They were kind of alarmed by some of the measures taken in the run-up to the campaign, such as basically pressuring state banks to lend a lot more at a time when really they should be deleveraging. And also there were price controls effectively implemented to try and bring down food price inflation. And people really want those measures unwound. They want some promises of a plan to tackle the underlying structural problems that Dan mentioned. So I think that it's hard to overestimate really the importance of this announcement that Berat Albayrak is going to make next week. Everyone will be watching it incredibly closely. And I think if it's seen as disappointing, the fear among investors is that Turkey could enter into another crisis period where people will start talking once again about the need for an IMF bailout.
Okay, well, with that forward-looking note, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much indeed to Laura in Ankara and to Dan here in the studio in London. That's it for this week. Until next week, goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.